Welcome to the Everything ECU podcast. I'm your host, Carla Ward, and joining me today is Eileen Steinberg, also known as the Lice Queen. Eileen has over 20 years of experience in treating lice infestations, and she has personally checked or successfully treated over 30,000 heads for lice. Now, if your head just started to itch, know that you are not alone. Eileen is the founder and CEO of Center for Lice Control, a company on a mission to eradicate head lice in the U.S. through educating the public about the prevention, detection, control, and treatment of lice. They've educated thousands of kids, parents, school staff, sports teams, pediatricians, and their nurses, day and overnight camp employees, and more across the U.S. about lice. And they also offer wildly popular lice treatment products without any pesticides or harsh chemicals. Make sure to check out our show notes for Eileen's information and a discount code to get a lice discount. I hope you find today's episode as fascinating as I did. Welcome to the show, Eileen. I am so excited to chat to you about a topic that has definitely received a bad reputation and one that is certainly making my head itch just thinking about it, but a topic that we can't ignore. So welcome. I am so excited to have you here today.
Thank you for having me, Carla. I'm very excited to be here and talk about lice. Sorry about the itch factor. I have that effect on people, but it's situational.
Fair enough. So before we dive into talking about lice, please share with us how you got into this line of work.
So being the solution to anything is really a gift, right? So I hoped in my life to be the solution to things. And throughout the jobs that I've had, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to do things in that way. One of them was I was a pastry chef. So, you know, that is a solution to a meal, right? It's the end of the meal. It's if the dessert is good, then the rest of the meal is better. If the dessert is off, the meal is questionable. So as a working in a kitchen, I had off in the summer and my pediatrician owned an overnight camp. And I, in an effort to be able to afford to send my four children to overnight camp, my pediatrician's camp offered me an opportunity to work for them so my kids could go to camp. I worked there for 12 years. The very first summer, which was 2007, we had a lice outbreak and it was in my division.
Of course it was.
Yes. And so it's not necessarily what I put in for the summer, but it's camp. You roll up your sleeves, you do everything that you can to make sure that the kids not only have the best summer ever, and that is literally the definition of your job, to make sure first the kids are safe, but that the kids try new things and spend their summer while they're with you just thriving. And you want to send them home better than you got them the 7 weeks before. And so here we are at camp. We're about 2 weeks into camp and my division, I was the head of the junior girls division, which was the youngest girls in camp. And we were at instructional swim and the health center called me. Two of the girls in my division had lice and they wanted me to check. My only experience with lice up to that point was when 8 years before, when my son was two and my daughter was about 6 months, my son got lice in preschool and he had it. I treated it, took care of it according to the package directions, did the follow-up treatment, thought I was like some amazing eradicator of whatever. And 3-4 weeks later, they called us in order to get into preschool. You had to get your head checked before they let you up to your classroom. And of course, they found it again on my son. And if they found it on the kids that day, they were checking the moms. Before I even sat my butt in the chair, the woman that was doing the head check said, "Oh my God, you have it." And she said it pretty loudly. So I'm a new mom at this school. Everybody turned and looked and I was horrified.
No.
My first experience was struggling to get rid of it. And when we dealt with it, it took 2 months to get rid of it. I don't know exactly when we were done, because I was just so worried about it because it was playing games with me, kept coming back. And really for like 5 years, and I'm a very laid back person, 5 years, that kind of, it was in the front of my brain kind of constantly. So ultimately I, you know, getting this news at camp just kind of threw me into a, you know, PTSD, PTLD of lice. And they said, you have to check your division. And the first 7 girls that I checked, who were all from the same neighborhood at home, all had it. And by the end of that morning, there were 14 cases of lice. And we were, you know, we started taking care of it. And for the next 5 weeks, really for the next 3 weeks, we tried the over-the-counter products. We retreated. There was still evidence of lice. The 14 girls that had it didn't share it with anybody new, but we couldn't get rid of it on those heads. After that, we tried different remedies that we found online. And online was kind of new at the time. So, you know, it's 2007. Eventually, I just started picking and not even combing because the combs weren't good. After doing it for so many years, I learned a lot, obviously. What I learned in the moment was it wasn't my fault that I couldn't get rid of lice when my son was 2 in 2000, you know, because it was it was product failure. And that's what I tell my clients. It's not people failure. It's product failure. And with that said, it's a $500 million industry, and there's no motivation truly to fix it because it, on average, from what I see in my salon, when people try to get rid of it, it's on average 3 to 5 treatments before they either get rid of it or they're fed up and they give up and then find a service or an alternative method. So, you know, I came home from camp that summer and my pediatrician was pretty motivated at that point to, you know, ask if I would help people because I think she started to see the writing on the wall that which was the go-to recommendation for any pediatrician or school nurse. And that fact is what really wasn't helping the situation. Yeah. It wasn't working. And that's when I started going to people's homes, treating people. I print out directions on MapQuest and go, and, you know, it was interesting. So I worked in the morning in the kitchen and then the rest of the day until sometimes midnight, I'd walk in my door. Then throughout the years, developed the product and a process that treats the life cycle. But what I've learned along the way is that there's a lot of things working against us when it comes to head lice. And most of what is working against us is the stigma, which is fueled by not great or accurate information. So that's my passion now.
Love that. And certainly from being a early childhood educator and being in the classroom for 18 years, I've certainly seen my fair share of lice as supervisor. That was me. If somebody suspected, you know, if a child just slightly itched their head more than once, they were in the office having their head checked by me. And I will never forget sitting in a tutoring session beside a girl with white blonde hair. And I looked over and there was a bug crawling from the tip of her hair towards her skull. You've never seen anybody jump up faster in your life. And like, thank goodness she had such white hair because we were able to pull, and that was the only one she had. Thankfully, it hadn't reproduced. But because my hair is so dark, it's always been a thing for me. Being in childcare, my hair was always up because I was like, you can't see it if it lands up in my dark hair. So certainly I'm glad we're talking about it because, like, my dad used to threaten to shave my head if I got it when I was in school. Like,
I always think that's funny.
I know. And I'm sure if I brought it up today, he'd still think it was funny because right. That was his solution. He's like, if you get lice, we're just going to shave your head. We're going to just, you know, cut it off at the source. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, I can't. And so I definitely want to talk about the stigmas, the myths and conceptions, because that's how we start all focusing on the solution, not the problem that is out of our control.
Correct. Exactly. And something that is so, something that we don't think of and which is very valuable for early childhood educators in general that work with kids. And if you can think about it, Carla, when kids are found to have lice, what are the adults' first reaction?
Jump off a chair and run to the other side of the room.
So what do you think that kid thinks in that moment?
100%.
What did they do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Why are all the adults around me going goofy? Why are they freaking out? Why did they turn into a five-year-old like me?
Mm-hmm.
Putting it out there, because that's kind of what happens. And why is now my mom has to leave work or find babysitters for whoever's at home to come pick me up and spring into action? What did I do wrong as that little person?
So true.
And by the time kids come into me in the salon, many things have happened. Mom cried. Mom freaked out. Mom took my favorite lovey. I can't sleep in my bed with my pillow. I'm sleeping on the floor in a sleeping bag. I mean, so many things happen that early on in my nitpicking career, which is where the word comes from, I'm a professional nitpicker. One of the things I learned so early on is I wore scrubs or a lab coat. And when kids would come in, or I would go to their house or school, they thought I was going to give them a shot or a jab. They thought they were getting some kind of medical treatment, and they were afraid. So they were afraid already from the backstory, whatever it was leading up to now they are getting professionally take help to, you know, what's going to happen. And it can't be great because their mom just pulled and tugged and hurt their head. Whatever they put on their head may be burned or smelled bad. And, you know, it's a stressful, it becomes very stressful. The reality is that only the sweetest people get lice, and you get it for all the right reasons.
I love that. And what are the right reasons, just out of curiosity?
You get lice two ways. One is by sharing a hairbrush. So don't share hairbrushes.
Yeah.
The other way to get lice. So I like to kind of map it out this way. Like 4%, 5% of cases of lice, maybe a little bit more, come from sharing a hairbrush. Not every hairbrush has lice on it. And not everybody that has lice that uses a hairbrush and then somebody else uses it has it. But if an adult female bug, which is what makes a person or an item contagious, comes off on a hair follicle or gets combed out of a brush and into the hair that's packed in the back of a brush, the next person that uses that, she's going to climb onto that next host that way. The other way to get lice is 92% of that apple pie figure. She's climbing onto a new host through direct head-to-head contact. And there is our, you know, right reason. Because why do our heads touch?
We give hugs.
They touch for all. We give hugs. It's all positive interactions.
Yeah.
No matter how you select, right? If you are a mom, you pick your kids up, they hug on you like a koala bear with their legs wrapped around. They put their head on your shoulder and your hair is down. Even if your hair is back and they put their head on your head, there's hair to hair contact.
Mm-hmm.
So narrowing the target is great, but it's not 100% effective. Ultimately, when we take pictures, we lean in. When we're playing in close contact, if we're sitting on a tablet or a phone and we're looking at something together, we end up our hair touches. And that only takes about 3 to 5 seconds. If there's an adult female on that part of the head that touches the other person, she smells a new host and goes right onto that new host. And there, that's when it begins. And now it has been shared. The good thing is that there's a grace period to taking care of that. And I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but there's a really almost like a 2-week period of time where that person is not contagious yet.
Oh, okay.
So that's when you want to find lice. And
yes,
since I'm the Center for Lice Control, my goal is the best form of lice control is finding it in that short period of time before that person has enough to share with anybody. You're effectively stopping the outbreak before it carries on and continues.
Which makes perfect sense.
Right.
two follow-up questions.
Yes.
One, so head-to-head, this is fascinating. Now that I've like gotten over the heebie-jeebies, like now I just find this absolutely fascinating. So can lice jump from one head to another, or does it have to be head, like hair to hair?
They do not jump.
Interesting.
They crawl.
They crawl. Fascinating. Second question. So we're talking about hair brushes and we're talking about hair to hair contact. So sharing hats in a dramatic center, can they go from hair to hat, from hat to hair?
You can paint the scenario that yes, they can. So if the person that, let's say the first person that uses that hat has a very contagious case, a bug can come off of the hair follicle onto the hat. Like, so let's say a hair follicle comes off with hair, which hair follicles do, and it is in the hat. The next person that puts that hat on can get it.
Because it's on the hair follicle.
Right. If the hat is on the head long enough and a bug gets confused and crawls onto the hat by accident, there's nothing on that hat instinctively that that bug wants, because they are looking to lay their nits and have a meal. Their nits are the eggs, which is the next generation. However, there's no food source on that hat. So instinctively, they're not going to a hat.
Right. Interesting.
So it's much less. So when it comes to the classroom, it's not so much the bin of clothes that are in, unless somebody's wildly contagious, has an advanced case, and they have a lot of adult female activity, which mm-hmm. can happen and does happen, but it's a lot less than you think. They are more likely to get lice when two kids go into the bin together and their heads are touching at the top of the bin than actually the clothes that they're putting on.
Interesting. I find that so fascinating, because that was always, again, right? Perfect example of a misconception was we can't have hats because children are going to get lice that way. And really, it's a much smaller percentage than we're led to believe.
Correct. The classroom is not the offender.
Okay.
It's the space invaders, the students that are in the class. And they're, when you just watch kids play, the way you know this more than I do as an early childhood educator, that kids learn to trust people. They learn safety and comfort in being close to each other.
Of course.
And the huggers are my frequent flyers.
And we don't want that to change for them. We don't want them having lice necessarily, but we certainly do not want to crush them from being loving souls.
Exactly. So when a parent tells a child in the salon, stop hugging everybody, do fist bump, do elbow bump, do something different, that's fair to say, okay? We don't want to stop the interaction. But if a person, if a four-year-old or a five-year-old's going to hug, and that's their first, you know, instinct when they see their friend, that's who they are. And that's a beautiful thing. And we don't want to change that. The best way to control lice is not through not hugging. The best way, or through physical interaction, the best way is to learn how to do a combing head check.
Okay, let's talk about that more.
So my, you know, schools do visual head checks, and that's pretty much, assuming that they even do, because a lot of schools are doing less and less head checks. More early childhood, they'll take a class if there's a more than one case, and they'll check from what I experience in our area. But on the whole, schools are pulling away, elementary schools and higher are pulling away from doing classroom head checks. And while parents don't love the idea, that's honestly, you're chasing your tail when that's your method of controlling an outbreak. And it, one of the big perspective checks is, imagine people love to blame the school. My kid went to school, they got lice at school. However, the school nurse is not checking, or my kid had it and we found it the day after the school nurse checked. Think about it this way. You're relying on your school nurse to control a lice outbreak, not for your class, but for your entire school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not realistic.
No.
So by parents learning how to do a combing head check with a knit comb, then you have you're controlling lice for your individual family.
Right.
And that amounts to, when you have a good percentage of people doing that, can't rely on everybody to do that, but when you have a good percentage of people doing combing head checks, because the key is finding lice in that first early stage from exposure. 14 to 20 days is really the time frame that you want to find it before a person has their own mama fertilized bugs that they can share, because it does take that long. Finding it before that, very hard to find. Looking visually, you want to use a comb. So after a bath or a shower, towel dried hair, detangle it. You want to take a knit comb and go around. I have actually on my website a video how to do a ponytail or peace of mind head check. And for boys and for girls, it's a peace of mind head check. Long hair versus short hair. It's still a head check with a comb, even if there's a buzz cut. It's another misconception that you can't have lice with a buzz cut. And a buzz cut is not a treatment for head lice. You can treat it if it's at an early stage, and that's good enough. But there's that small window, and we don't always find it at that time. So by relying on a visual head check, you're really relying on finding enough activity. And by that point, the person's probably contagious.
Okay. All right. But then at least that way, you know, right?
Exactly.
In their home. Okay. Now, right. I have a girlfriend, and both of us used to work in childcare, and we used to do this, but now I'm wondering if it's another misconception, is we would put tea tree oil around the rim of our hairlines to apparently prevent the lice from coming onto our hair. But is that a misconception?
It's a misconception.
Darn.
Sorry. So any preventative product, and I think it's $250 million, you know, it's a $1 billion industry for lice products. I think half of that is preventative, maybe even a little more. Here's my stand on it, because I treat too many people that use these products and they tend to think, well, I can't have lice because I use this stuff. So their cases tend to be worse.
Oh, because they, yes, that would make sense.
Because they are relying on a product. If you have hair on your head, you're a candidate for lice. Doesn't matter what your ethnicity is, doesn't matter what your hair type is, doesn't matter really how long it is. If you're bald, you can't have lice. And if you use ethnic products that are oil-based and you put them on every day, then you still can get lice, but the nit can't lay, the female adult louse can't lay her nit on the hair shaft because it's too slick. And therefore, you can have lice or evidence of lice, but not an outbreak. With that said, to me, prevention products are, I tell people, if you like the aroma of it, or you like the detangling properties of it, or the moisturizing properties of it, great. But don't use it because of lice. Imagine, so if the aroma, and I'm not saying they don't work, but how long is the aroma on board for? And how long are you in school or on a play date or at a class?
Right.
So the shampoos, the conditioners, the leave-in conditioners, the sprays, people put essential oils. I think it's all a marketing campaign to sell this stuff for your fear. But I treat too many people that use this stuff. I smell it when they walk in here.
Of course. I was going to say, and if it worked, you wouldn't have a business.
Right. I would have a great business if it did work, because that's what I would be putting out there.
Fair enough.
Okay. But not all essential oils are safe to use. So you also want to double check and make sure that if you're putting something on daily that you like, remember it's not for lice, but if you do like to use it, then fine. But just make sure, really check not the marketing materials from the essential oil company, but really look deeper at the actual oil itself to find out what's really at play. But it does make you feel like you're doing something when you do that. And it is great to narrow the target by putting your hair up.
Right.
However, these products, I wish I could say that there was something that worked, but no.
So what is the best course of prevention? Or is it more so just being prepared and preventing outbreak?
That's it.
Okay.
Being educated and then doing head checks to prevent outbreaks. With my clients in the salon and on my hotline, when I get calls from people, there is no way to prevent head lice. If you have head lice on your head, you are a candidate for lice. Doesn't mean that if your best friend has it or your child has it, that you do have it, but it definitely means that you are more at risk. Also, keep in mind, we are relying on people to communicate that they have lice, and people don't always do that. So you don't want to wait for somebody to say that they have it. You also don't want to wait for somebody to say that they're itchy, because not everybody is itchy from having it. 100% of people are itchy talking about it.
Yes, we are.
But only 50% of people are itchy with lice.
Interesting.
And it's not the bug that's crawling. When somebody calls me to tell me that a bug is crawling around, they feel them crawling, that's psychosomatic.
Mm-hmm.
That people are itchy from the allergic reaction they have to the bug bite.
Interesting.
Now, I had a mom in here this morning. She was itchy like 3 weeks ago, which makes perfect sense. Then the itch went away and it came back a few days ago, because the babies of the adult that were the first nits that were laid in her hair. So the mama bug got on her head. She laid nits, but she died, because that's what happens. They die when they transfer to the new host. So now you have no bugs, but you have nits that were placed in the perfect spot to incubate on that new host. That can be anywhere from a quarter of an inch from the scalp to about 3 inches on the hair shaft. So it's very typically at about an inch, but it could be anywhere within that space that it's viable. And they take 7 to 10 days to incubate and hatch. Now you have tiny babies. At that point, sometimes people are itchy, but there's hardly anything to see. There could be 6 nits in a head full of beautiful hair, especially if it's a little person, they're a moving target. It's very hard to find hatched nits, which stay on the hair shaft until they grow out. So you have a lighter nit that's hard to see, hard to find. 7 to 10 days for those baby bugs to mature into adults. Whenever the adult female lays her nits, she always lays 1 male, the rest are female. So let's say there's 5, there's 4 female, 1 male.
Hmm.
Male fertilizes the female. Now, all within about 36 hours, those females are now fertilized and they each can lay up to 10 new nits a day.
Oh, and every gosh.
It just keeps going. So people tend to be itchy when the babies hatch. So it may be the first round of babies that hatch, but it's hard to see. So the itch gets worse and worse until you finally find something. Or the itch may not start until you're 8 weeks in. And if you do the math, that's a lot of activity.
That is a lot of activity. So, and it's a gamble to wait that long for sure. Ooh, wow. Just did a whole bunch of math on that reproduction. So, what exactly are we looking for when we comb out? Because I'm thinking, like, sometimes I have dandruff. So how do I know that I've combed out an egg and not a piece of dandruff?
What I like to do, there's a few different methods. Some people put it in water and then they hold the water up to the light. I use a white paper towel. I use the Selecta size because they're the perfect width. And I fold the paper towel in half with wet, detangled hair. You run the comb through the hair. You want to stay close to the scalp, come all the way down the hair shaft, and wipe it into a paper towel. Now, you'll find things. Dandruff, if you look at the comb, you're going to see dandruff. You're also going to see shampoo that didn't get rinsed out, or if you use any product or whatever, that's going to be flaky and on the comb. Don't look at the comb. You'll drive yourself bonkers, especially if there's cradle cap, whatever. Wipe it onto the white paper towel. That white paper towel is white. Dandruff is white. Product is off-white. That tends to blend in. Lice and their nits are brown. And it's way easier to see on the paper towel. Unfortunately, which you can't unsee, that if you do that and there's actually a bug, it's moving. So if something crawls on that paper towel, you have a very quick confirmation.
Answer. Yeah.
On my website, I have samples of what to look for we have a sample card that, and we have it on our social media and we'll repost it. So it's more topical on top, but you're looking for any evidence, whether they are nits or actual lice, which could be adults, which are the size of a small ant. So they're not that small. Mm-hmm. They're actually pretty easy to see. They're just hard to see in hair. And the longer a person has lice, the more camouflage they become, because they are parasite. So they are feeding off of you and they are picking up your coloring.
That makes sense. And that actually leads to my next question, which was like, I don't want to say a dumb question, but I felt like one that had to be addressed is, why is lice bad? Like, why do we not want it? And it's because it's a parasite.
It's a parasite, but I love that question, because my thing is, let's reduce the stigma. You get lice for all the right reasons. So if a mom gets lice from her kids, she's a good mom. By the time a mom sits down for a head check in my chair, she hopes she has it. And it's like such a crazy thought process, but you get it for all the right reasons, right? So if you have it and you're a mom or a teacher or a speech therapist, especially with early childhood education, little kids are space invaders and you are their jungle gym at times. And they sometimes just need that closeness. And that's, so if you get lice, it's a compliment.
I think that's so great.
And also, real quick, in history, it meant that you were healthy. Okay. If you were a host for head lice, it meant you were healthy because your blood was healthy. And it also meant you were a leader in your community because you got close enough to people.
That's awesome. I just watched the movie Aliens with Sigourney Weaver. And every time you say the word host, that is all I'm picturing is the alien.
That's so funny.
I can't unsee it. It's making me laugh over here because I just can't unsee it in my vision. But let's talk about, so next steps. So you get lice, you find it on the comb. What do you do?
So you need to treat. There are multiple suggested methods. Some are good, some are not so great. So the over-the-counter products, unfortunately, products that are neurotoxin based. So permethrin and pyrethrins are neurotoxin based. So are some of the prescriptions. And you're in Canada, I'm in the US. It's pretty similar, although the US still, in some states, allow people to use lindane, which is a carcinogen. If anybody prescribes that, the risk does not outweigh the benefit because there are now better treatments. So if I like to now say, and I've been saying this for almost the past 8 years, 9 years, that if you have lice, it's probably because somebody tried to get rid of it with over-the-counter products and couldn't, or home remedies and couldn't. There are enzyme treatments. There are salt treatments, which dry out the mm-hmm. bugs, the eggs. These are all better than permethrin, but they both require a lot of follow-up to make sure that you're successful. And in those processes, to be successful, you really need to remove all the eggs, all of the nits, to be successful. There are heated air treatments. I worked with the heated air device company that's out of Utah, and I was one of their first technicians in the US to use their device. And it's a good process. My contribution to their process was my product. Their process desiccates or dries out the eggs. You have to be 3 years old or older. Not everybody can tolerate it because it's very hot, but it's a good process. It works, takes a fair amount of time. It's only a professional process. So you have to go somewhere to have it done. And it takes a while. I did it. I liked the process, but I found that relying on my product and my process was just way more practical in the end and cheaper to do. So I passed that savings on to my clientele. So I don't charge as much anymore for treatments. My method, I use dimethicone. Dimethicone is an oil that doesn't thin out with body heat, and it works really well at eliminating the live activity. With that said, in my process, we don't have to remove the nits to be successful. So it's a great process for people that have special needs, that have hair that cannot be combed, whether it's for ethnic reasons or physical reasons that somebody can't physically sit still to be properly combed. As long as three treatments are done, there's several different dimethicone products. Mine is the lice attack solution. It doesn't mess around. It eliminates all live activity through suffocation and not regular oils thin out at lower temperatures than our body heat. And therefore they're not as effective as the lice attack solution. So you can put olive oil on. That's what I started. That was my first method of treating because people aren't allergic to olive oil and I can use that on anybody. And it is makes the hair really easy to comb out the eggs. And, but I could comb somebody for an hour or two and on the last swipe still get an adult bug that's moving, that's alive. So the oil thins out because there our body temperature, which is 98.6 degrees, and it thins out and they pass it through, hold their breath, lay dormant, sit and wait until the hair's washed out, and then they keep going. So there's the secret sauce. It's a very precise process. In my three treatments, you're eliminating all live activity and therefore there's no new nits laid. And after the very first treatment, the person's no longer contagious because there's no adult females left. And they then, you know, there's no new nits after that. However, the reason why I recommend combing is because you do not want to have a false positive down the road. The nits will grow out, not come out on their own. So what you're left with at the end of the three treatments, if there is any nits left after that, they are either already hatch nits that are still in the hair shaft, but empty, but you don't know that. I would know that. A professional nitpicker would know that. It's a nit that would have never hatched. So it's not viable. And it looks like a new nit. But knowing that it could be new exposure, you don't know if it's new or old. So you have to assume that it's current and treat again. That's the only reason why there's combing involved with my process. So there are out there. You have to look to see what makes sense. There are services out there. If you have the means and there's a good service in your area, that's great. Not all services are great either. So, you know, you just have to do your research. But I have great videos on my website and I have an Amazon store so people can get products pretty quickly.
Amazing. And we'll make sure that everything's linked below this podcast. So it's an easy click so that everybody can, you know, watch the YouTube videos and what they're looking for. And, you know, certainly have combs and product in-house in case we ever are put in a situation where we need to eradicate these things.
That's great. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was so enlightening. A part of me kind of wishes I was still a supervisor so that I could share this knowledge with my childcare centers. But I know that doing a podcast interview, we were able to get into so many centers and the ears of so many educators. So you have just been able to help a lot of people with eradicating lice and for keeping children calm while they work through it.
I'm so glad. Thank you, Carla, for giving me this opportunity to share my experience and knowledge. And I have a hotline if people have questions, especially childhood educators, because I want them to feel calm about this. My website has a lot of great information and they can call my hotline, which is right on the website, and just ask me questions and hopefully I can help directly.
Awesome. Thank you so much.